It's Mother's Day, and there will be candy, right? Okay, all right. So there will be candy. So this is not the best part of the service. The best is yet to come. I was caught in a little bit of a bind, mostly of John Chastain's doing, since he always skips out on Mother's Day on me. And because I had started our series of lessons on the neglected stories of Jesus. And those of you who were last year when I preached on Mother's Day, I commented how difficult it was to come up with a text. But I came up with one this year. It took me about a year, and it is a neglected story of Jesus. Okay. Remember, these are stories that don't get much play. And my guess is you may be thinking, what story did he come up with? And I got to tell you, it's not about Mary. Or Elizabeth, okay. All righty. Stories that on first reading seem to be quite simple but have a deeper meaning. Stories that remind us of the nature of Jesus when he walked upon the earth. And our story is a mother's request. Okay. Now, I've been kind of moving through the Gospels, so far just Mark and Matthew, in kind of chronological order. But we're going to kind of skip out of the chronology to this day, and you can just blame mothers in general for that, because I had to go where the mother's story was. And this story takes place at the end of Christ's ministry, probably when he is on his way from Galilee down through what's called Judea across the Jordan, to Jericho, and then he goes up to Jerusalem, and it probably takes place someplace in this area on the journey to Jerusalem for the last time. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit for this story. Okay. Matthew 20, beginning in verse 20, and then the mother, see, I got mother in here real early, didn't I? Okay. The mother of the sons of Zebedee came to him with her son. So that would be the sons of Zebedee. And kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, "What do you want?" And she said, "Say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one on your right hand and one on your left hand, in the kingdom." Okay. Now, if you know this story, you'll know that she raised kind of a hornet's nest. Okay. This was not a well-taken request from anybody except maybe her sons, James and John. In fact, I had other titles for this sermon, okay? A mother who loved her sons, maybe too much, okay? A pushy mother, tried to push her sons out ahead of the other disciples. If any of these fit you mothers, you need to listen up. If y'all, maybe all of them will. But I like this one, a mother who had spunk. Okay, I like people with spunk, even if they're a little bit of a scallywag. Okay, you know, David had spunk. Solomon did not. Peter had spunk. You know, people in the Bible that a lot of times get themselves in trouble because they've got spunk. And you ask, what is spunk? Does everybody know what spunk is? If you don't, I'll just give you my mother's definition. She called it spizzorinctums. And I can't put that on a slide because I have no idea how to spell it. I think it begins with an S and ends with an S. But you can just fill in the letter. She called it a person who had spizzorinctums. My mother had spunk, by the way. Her mother had spunk. My other grandmother didn't particularly have it, although I think I loved them all the same. But it's people who have got, they're like the rat dog, okay? I've talked to you about the rat dog before. I had this little bitty dog Sharon found by the road. She named it Tater Tot because it was looked like a brown tater tot, and then that morphed into Totsy. She called it Totsy because Tater Tot was too long, but I call it the rat dog because it looked like those rat-shaped dogs that you see in Tom and Jerry and other cartoons that are nearly always kind of bad. That was just what, rat dog was not a pretty dog. Rat dog was not a big dog. Rat dog was not a hunting dog, but rat dog had spunk. Okay, nearly killed one time attacking a boar. Okay, cut her belly open. Would have killed her, except she was just too light. When it hit her, it just threw her and just cut under the skin, okay? When Rat Dog was young, we had gone to the woods and we came back and all the other dogs were back and Rat Dog wasn't there. She wasn't old enough, okay? Wasn't old enough to be out in the woods at night. And so finally I went down and I found her on a dead tree with no limbs on it that went up into the canopies of the other tree, sitting down at the bottom looking up. And a squirrel, she had chased a squirrel up that tree, and of course the squirrel, being smarter than the Rat Dog, went up, got on some limbs and left, and Rat Dog didn't know it. And as near as we can tell, Rat Dog was going to spend the rest of her life waiting for that squirrel to come down. She had spunk. She didn't give up. When the bigger dogs got on her, she just let into them. And they, dogs don't laugh, but I just kind of thought they all kind of laughed and just let her alone. She had spunk. Well, the mother of the sons of Zebedee had spunk. Okay? All right. And Jesus answered, "You do not know what you're asking." Now, it's obvious from the context here that he has turned away from the mother to the sons of Zebedee. Okay? Because they said to him, he says, "Are you able to drink the cup that I am able to drink?" Now, he's going to Jerusalem. He's going to die. He's told them about it, but they haven't quite gotten it. Then he says, "Can you, you want to be on my right hand, okay, in the kingdom? Can you put up, can you do what I'm about to do?" Now, they could. They did, most probably. But they didn't know it at the time, okay. And they said, "We're able." Big talk. Okay, big talk. When it comes time, when push comes to shove, they'll be gone. Okay. By the way, this is James and John, and James will be the first of the apostles who is martyred. John evidently will live a long life. Okay. And he said to him, Jesus said to them, "You will drink my cup." Okay. In other words, you're going to do this, but to sit on my right hand and my left hand is not mine to grant, but for those who, for whom it has been prepared by my Father. I want you to remember that last sentence. That is an amazing sentence. Okay. We'll talk a little bit about that. Okay. And when the 10 had heard it, so there's 12 disciples, two of them had brought their mother, okay, you know, and she's come to Jesus and said, "Let my sons be your number one and your number two guys in the kingdom." Okay, and the rest of them, they didn't like it. And you can understand why, don't you? Wait a minute, what about us? We don't have our mother here, but we need at least a, you know, equal opportunity here. And they get mad, and there's this fight, turmoil, conflict within the apostles. And I don't want to say it was fomented by a pushy mother, but I think she had part of it. Some scholars think that maybe James and John put her up to this. Mark tells this same story and doesn't even mention the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Okay. And when the 10 heard it, they were indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them." Probably talking about the Syrian rulers, the Roman rulers. They came in great processions. They required people to bow down to them. They were big poobahs, okay, in kind of a modern terminology. So you know, you have seen this kind of stuff. "But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you," this is to these 12 apostles, "must be your slave." That gets even worse, doesn't it? Nobody wants to be a servant, but to be a slave, that's really something that nobody wants. "Even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." Okay, well, let's go over this a little bit. First, let's talk about the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Doesn't mention their name or her name, okay, but I think we know it, okay. It is probably, and I put probably kind of probably like, it's almost certainly Salome, one of the women who was at the cross of Jesus and who came to the tomb, okay. One of the women who had been with Jesus throughout his ministry, evidently supporting him. Most Bible scholars think that Zebedee, her husband, the father of James and John, was a well-to-do man, had a big fishing business, okay, up on the Sea of Galilee. And she probably then had access access to funds and finance Jesus, okay, doing this. All right. One of the, probably the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And now the story gets a little bit more complicated, if this is true, and I think it is, okay. This is kin. You know, Matthew's not kin to Jesus. We don't know about James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot. Peter may have been, but if this is right, and I think it is, this means that she's his aunt. His mother and this woman were sisters. And now the pressure goes on Jesus a little bit more, doesn't it? Okay, this is not just somebody showing up. This is somebody that supported you all along. This kind of sounds like a lobbyist in today's term, doesn't it? You know, I have given you all this money. I need you to help me out with this piece of legislation, doesn't it? And Jesus avoids that. Maybe there's a lesson for us in that, okay? But so she's his aunt, and interestingly enough, that makes John and James his first cousins, yeah. So maybe this is a family story, okay? Seems to be. Let's talk a little bit about that. How do we know that? Okay, well, this is based on harmonizing the stories in the gospel of Jesus' death, okay? And it's a little bit, you have to be careful when you do this, but I think we're on pretty firm ground here. Okay, you see if you agree. So Matthew writes it this way. Jesus is on the cross, and this is what's happening around him, okay? And there were also many women there looking on from a distance who had followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, and among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. And most people think that that second Mary is Mary, also the mother of Jesus, because one of his brothers was James, okay, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. So we see this woman is at the cross. Okay. Now, Mark writes it this way. There was also women looking on from a distance, and among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Younger, and Joseph, and Salome. So simple, though this is not arithmetic, what is this? Well, I'm going to just call it arithmetic. It says there's two Marys, and there's the mother of Zebedee, of the sons of Zebedee, and there's two Marys, and there's Salome. So that's how we get the connection here. Okay, and she's a great supporter of Jesus and one of those women who went to his tomb when all the men had gone into hiding. But John says this, okay. But standing at the cross were his mother, that would be Mary, the first Mary, and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And so we've seen Mary, the son of the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene. So now we come up with another Mary, okay, who seems to be also the Salome. You know, we see different names of various people throughout the New Testament, and seems to be then the sister of Mary. So take it for what you will, but this looks like it is a family situation. And all those of us who have families know what a family situation is. It seems inevitable when families get together, somebody will say something that we want to say, oh, I don't believe I'd have told that if I were you. Anyway, all right. Okay, so we know she's the wife of Zebedee. Okay. He's probably a prosperous owner of a fishing business. And, by the way, at one time Jesus refers to James and John as the sons of thunder. And so Zebedee and thunder are tied together, and Zebedee doesn't mean thunder, okay? It means something else, and it tells us, I think, something about Zebedee, that he was a thunder. You can analyze that however you want, but I think it probably means he was a type A personality that never passed up a chance to keep his mouth shut, okay? And she's his wife, and they're his sons, and something, at least onto the sons, seem to have rubbed off because just Jesus calls them the sons of thunder. And the mother of the apostles, James and John, and we talked about it, being Jesus' aunt. Okay. So we go back to the story. We can understand what Salome, this mother of the sons of Zebedee, had in mind, can't we? Okay. She believed that Jesus was the Messiah. She believed and had heard his teachings. And she saw this coming of the kingdom. And like everybody else but John the Baptist and Jesus, she didn't entirely understand it correctly. And she said, look, my sons have been picked as these 12 with Jesus. I want them to be right up there at the very top. Sit on the right, I'm doing it to your side, right hand and left hand. In other words, be the number one and the number two assistants in your kingdom. Okay. She's just looking out after her own. That's what mothers do. Go to any young boys' football game and look into the stands and you will see. Wouldn't you just love to be a referee at one of those with all these mothers jumping all over you? That was a clipping. You know, that wasn't a foul. You know, yeah, he's smiling. He knows what I'm talking about. Fathers do it also. Looking out after their son. Somebody else gets hurt. No, they don't run down into onto the field, do they? But if their son gets hurt, they run down. We understand that. It is something about motherhood. It's something about motherhood which is just kind of built into us. You know, an owl, a bird, will fake a broken wing and run off from a coyote rather than flying off to try to get the coyote to follow her away from the nest. Okay. It's just what mothers do, isn't it? If they just protect their children. How sad it is, and we seem to be seeing it more and more, of mothers who abandon their children, of mothers who abuse their children or allow their children to be abused. It is sad because it is unnatural. It's not the way mothers are made. So, she starts up this whole thing, and then everybody gets to fight, and a fight. Okay, I don't know if they actually threw fisticuffs. I guess not. But no, you don't get to be first. I want to be first. I want to be first. Or if I can't be first, I don't want anybody to be first. Okay, sound personal here? It's kind of the way that they are. You've probably been in a job where somebody else got the job you wanted. I was happy in the job I am, but I'm not happy with it now because he got a better job than me. Okay? We understand that, don't we? And then Jesus turns to them and he explains. One, I'm not making this decision. Okay? And number two, you're striving after the wrong thing. Okay? Now let's go just real quickly let's just go to our lessons and we'll do it this way. Okay? Mothers want the best for their children. Amen. Okay. I guess it's the way it ought to be. Maybe sometimes it causes problems, but we children need to realize that about our mothers. They want the best for us. Okay. Even when we don't think they're going about it the best way. Okay. I see one over here that's guilty. Anybody else that's guilty? All right, I see the look of you. I'm guilty. I want the best. I don't care really as much about your son as I do about mine. Okay, and that's true, isn't it? Okay, I mean, we gotta face up to facts. They want the best for their children, and this is one of the reasons we got a Mother's Day. Now, by the way, there are a whole lot of other reasons we got a Mother's Day, most of which are financial and having to do with the flower business and the chocolate-covered strawberry business and the candy business and the going out to eat. But there's something real about this Mother's Day thing, isn't there? By the way, a school district in Australia has banned Mother's Day from all calendars because they feel like it makes all non-mothers somehow inferior. Okay? I think they're probably right. I just think they're going about it the wrong way. Okay, but anyway, all right. So, mothers want the best for their children. This is the part I like, the second part I like about it, because we got the mother with spunk, spizzle rinktums, Okay. Some things are even above Jesus' pay grade. I don't get to decide this. Now, we have to ask ourselves real quick, when was this going to take place? Because they probably thought it was going to take place in a month or 6 months or a year in this kingdom on earth. Jesus knows about his kingdom on earth, not going to look like they expected it. And he also knows about the kingdom to come. But isn't it interesting that he says, I don't even get to decide this. This is the Father's deciding. This shows us one of the separations, the differences between the Father and the Son that kind of get glossed over in the Trinitarian doctrine, okay, the Orthodox doctrine. This is not a time when the decision is made by both Jesus and the Father, or by the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. The Father is making this decision. I got no say in it. You're asking the wrong guy. Now, it may be that this is referring to Peter, who seems to have been ascendant over the others in the apostles. I think it's probably talking about the kingdom in heaven, the kingdom of heaven, in heaven. But it's something that Jesus doesn't get to decide. Okay, and maybe after the mother of the sons of thunder comes up to him, he's kind of glad that he doesn't have to decide it, because now he doesn't have to tell her no. Okay, you can talk to the Father about this if this doesn't happen. It got him off the hook a little bit. I don't know. Jesus has had mother's problems at other times in his ministry. Okay. Jealousy is a problem in the church. And you would think it would not be. Okay. We have seen it here in this church. You will see it wherever you go. People get jealous of other people. Okay. It may be as simple as their casserole tastes better than my casserole. Okay. It may be as complicated as they're in charge and I could do a whole lot better job. There are all kinds of ways that jealousy can enter in the church, but wanting to be ahead of our fellow church members is the primary way. And the apostles were all real happy until somebody suggested that somebody be ahead of them. Okay? They were happy being wherever they were until they found out somebody, wait a minute, somebody is moving ahead of me. It's a problem, and it can only be dealt with in the way Jesus talks about it. Okay? So it's the only way it's going to work. Okay? This is the message of the washing of the feet. This is the message of the Son upon the cross, hung up there naked, being killed, okay, for other people when he had every right to lord it over everybody else, just like these Gentiles, because he knew that the message of Christianity was not ascendancy. It was not being first. It was being last. It was being the servant. It was being the slave. We each owe to each other service. We each owe to each other doing the similar things that Jesus did. Because he gave us the example. You know, he had such few clothes when they killed him that they had to cut one of them apart. They couldn't divide it among three people. Okay? He had nothing. He had lived under the aegis of these women. He had nothing because he had to prove that having nothing is the first step to having everything. And I'll leave you with a question. Would it not be fair to say that the one who was able to serve, who didn't have a mother trying to put them ahead of everybody else, who didn't want to be ahead of everybody else, particularly when they find that somebody else was trying to get ahead of him, that person would be the person who God picked to sit on Jesus' right hand and his left hand? And shouldn't that inform our lives as we live together in this assembly, outside this assembly, in the world?